This episode is brought to you by California Psychics. As a listener of the Dr. Drew podcast, enjoy connecting with a spiritual counselor for only a dollar a minute. Call 1-800-374-7354 to find out more. Tomorrow starts today with California Psychics.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and I just want to thank you for joining the Dr. Drew podcast and supporting the Corolla Pirate Ship here at the Corolla Network. And please, just a reminder, tell a friend about these podcasts. That is how this thing grows organically, and that is how we want this to grow. We want it to be a community of people that connect, and we talk about interesting things. And by the way, feel free to give us feedback and stuff, particularly for my show, that you'd like to hear. We'll be happy to set it up on the program. And again, tell a friend and keep this pirate ship afloat.
This is Corolla Digital.
And welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. It is my pleasure today to welcome Alexis Nears. But before we get to her, I've got a bunch of crazy business I got to get out of the way. Just with Mr. Corolla, and he beat on me about remembering that we should keep the wind in the sails of the Corolla Pirate Ship. So please do support the people that support us here, and do not forget to click through the Amazon link at drdrew.com. Does not cost a thing, but keeps this ship afloat. Also, some of you like and some of you hate the swinging sounds that Chris Mexpata put together, but if you like them, they're available at drdrew.com and at iTunes. And also, don't forget The Boy with the Gun by Brandon Stockdale. If you're interested in an interesting read about transformation, That is an exemplary read. But before we get on to Alexis, Matt's got a little business. Matt Fondelier, what do you got?
Hey, what's going on, Drew? Well, thanks for having me on. Just want to talk to you real quick about a new sponsor you guys have called California Psychics. And there's a special dedicated line that's just for your listeners. And if you have any listeners out there that have, you know, career questions or relationship questions, I'm just encouraging you guys to try giving this number a call. It's only a buck a minute just for listeners here at the Dr. Drew Podcast. And you got to call 1-800-374-7354. That's 1-800-374-7354. I'm a skeptic, and I decided to give these guys a try. And, you know, I found that they give unbiased, non-judgmental advice. And the people on the customer care line were super helpful. They were able to immediately connect me with somebody who was able to help answer some of my biggest questions. And I think that's why people try calling these psychic hotlines. You get immediate answers to your most important questions, and they help you eliminate doubt, give you the confidence to make the right decisions, just like they did for me. And if it's not the best psychic reading you've ever had, it's free. That's their satisfaction guarantee. Sounds pretty good. And yeah, I would just encourage you guys to do the same. You can also go to californiapsychics.com for more information. And if you have any questions at all, give 1-800-374-7354 a call.
Thank you, man. I know you guys are getting big into that stuff, the calling out podcast and all that. So
yeah, Susan Pinsky.
Enjoy, guys. Enjoy. Thank you for supporting the pirate ship nonetheless. So, Alexis Nears, welcome to the program. So, it is a privilege having you. Anna David spoke very highly of you.
Oh, thank you.
A friend of the program.
Love Anna.
She's great.
She is.
And send out some of your information, and then I want to hear your story.
Okay.
Alexis is Alexis, A-L-E-X-I-S, Nears, N-E-I-E-R-S.com is her website. The Twitter handle is at It's Alexis Nears, and she is involved with a sober living facility called Acadia Malibu, acadiamalibu.com. We'll hear about that as the story unfolds. Your story. Why are people interested in you?
Oh, wow. Well, there's a number of things. I mean, first and foremost is the whole the Bling Ring, which everybody knows about, and they just made a movie about it with Sofia Coppola.
Did you advise the film? Was she consulting you about it?
She worked closely with my mom. I was more on like the outskirts of the whole negotiation process and all of that. And you know, I did my best to share with her my story and what took place, and then she made a movie based on, you know, I think she already had like a very set picture and idea in her head of what this was going to look like prior to meeting with me.
Right.
So
I'm guessing, I have to apologize. I have not seen the movie.
I haven't either.
Yeah. But I'm guessing this is your behavior at that time was way more about addiction than it was portrayed in the film.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's talk about that.
I mean, I don't think that people, up until recently, I started writing for Vice magazine, where I basically have been sharing openly about my experience with drugs and alcohol and my past abuse. But, you know, when the Bling Ring was taking place, I hadn't gotten sober yet. So I really hadn't been honest with anybody about my abuse and my, you know, using drugs and alcohol yet.
When the movie was taking place?
No, not when the movie was taking place.
Okay, so
when
you were sober by then.
Yes, yeah. So I'm almost 3 years sober now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Much better life than before. But
right? That's silly how that happens.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, during I started filming my reality show Pretty Wild, which aired on E! A few years back. The second day of filming, I was arrested for the burglary of Orlando Bloom's house, which was the whole Bling Ring and my association with the Bling Ring.
Was everybody addicted in that group?
I don't know. I really only knew Nick, and I knew him for a very short period of time. Yes, we used substances together, but I can't say whether someone is an addict or not.
Right.
So all I know is that I was abusing substances very heavily during that time period of my life, and continued to until December 1st when I was arrested of 2010, when I was arrested for possession of heroin, which is when I went to jail and then got sober.
Mm-hmm.
So
you got sober in jail?
Yes. So I kicked, I was arrested December 1st, possession of heroin, possession of a smoking device. And they raided my house because I didn't show up to probation for a couple of months. And I kicked from benzos, opiates, and crack in jail.
So opiates beyond heroin?
Yeah. So I was using oxys.
Did you have doctors giving you that stuff or are you getting off the street?
Off the street.
Okay. So which benzos?
Xanax.
Okay.
I had a love affair with for years and years and years. At that time, I was using about 2 milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
So
people understand. So it's basically heroin benzo, which is a deadly combination. You're lucky to have survived.
Yes.
It. When people die these days, that's what they're dying of.
Yeah.
And then you get into jail, and benzo withdrawal is seizures and agitation mm-hmm. and horrible, mm-hmm. like you're falling out of your skin, climbing
yeah.
the walls.
Way then, worse than the opiate detox. I mean, I felt it all.
And then opiate is misery and bone-crushing pain and mm-hmm. desperation mm-hmm. and dysphoria, and you did it all without any...
Cold turkey.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I had withdrawal. I was still experiencing withdrawals, I believe, like into my 90th day. Like I had irregular sleep patterns, irregular bowel movements.
I'm sure you look back at the first year and went, ooh, I was not right the whole year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely because I had tried Suboxone before. I'd tried to get sober before. Nobody said to me, which I find kind of bizarre, like I was unraveling quickly. I mean, I was panhandling on the streets for drug money. I was almost at the point of, like, prostitution. Like, I was literally considering prostituting myself.
It probably made sense to you, too.
Yes. I was on the streets of downtown. I was living in a Best Western on Franklin and Vine. My life was in shambles. And nobody said to me, you might want to try AA or you might want to try NA. I mean, I was 18, 19 at the time. And, and it was horrible. I mean, you can.
Why do you think there was? Well, you might not have listened, to be fair, but it's hard to get 18-year-old, 19-year-olds in that door. But
yeah.
But why do you think no one said that to you?
Well, at the time I was filming my show, and I think that some of it was that the producers obviously loved the drama aspect of it. I was at that point filming, 12, 15-hour days, 5, 6 days a week. So sending me to treatment, it wasn't the best time. My drug use really escalated when I had my show because I had unlimited funds. Mm. I mean, my sister and I combined were spending about $10,000 a week on drugs and alcohol and partying. So you weren't really going to stop me. I mean, my mom, she came to my place once and I had nothing but like beer and tinfoil in my house. And she did mention something. But my reaction was just volatile. And I said, I like to bake. And then I used a bunch of four-letter words that were just terrible that no one should ever say to their mom. But
maybe that people are afraid to say anything to you.
Yeah, so they're at that point, yeah, it's like you're not going to confront me because you think that, you know, I could go kill myself or
right,
whatever.
Right, they're fearful.
It was really bad. So,
well, yeah. let's roll it back. Okay. I'm still interested in how you found the motivation to get sober because it's not the – you're not painting the picture of somebody who gets it.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Even in my early sobriety, the ego was so big that it was like, I'm just opiate dependent. Like, I knew all the terminology, and you weren't going to fool me, you know?
Well, talk about that grandiosity and that ego for a second.
So, I mean, it goes
back.
Because
people don't understand when they see that. They don't know what that is. Go ahead.
I think that I always felt like I was really privileged. Like, I had a really, really bad upbringing.
Privileged.
So for me, but I believed that I deserved everything was basically it. Because I had such a bad upbringing and because, I was owed something.
And by bad, what happened?
Well, I had an alcoholic father. I was sexually abused from 3 to 6 years old, which I now found out was considered rape by a family member.
What's considered rape? What do you mean?
I was forced to perform oral sex. So I found out that, you know, that's considered rape.
It's more than rape. Way more than rape. That's rape is like an easy term for this.
Yeah. So I was 3 to 6 years old.
This is called shattering.
Yeah.
Shattering experiences.
Yeah. So I blocked that out, though, for so many years. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't even recall that until after I got sober for the first time when I was 18.
That's
I started having night terrors.
Mm-hmm.
And up until this month, I didn't report it to the police. I actually reported it for the first time
Good
this month.
That's very heavy.
Yeah. So
was it a family member?
Yes.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's
Which
tough.
Just makes it all of that much worse.
Do you have a therapist now, too?
Yes.
Good.
You know, an amazing
sponsor.
You need that
base yes. to do this kind of stuff from, or you can't do it.
Yeah. And so, you know, mix that with an alcoholic father, mm-hmm. and then, you know, my mom has always had her own set of mental health issues, depression, ADHD, anxiety. So it was very unstable. So I started drinking and using at a really young age. And by the time I was 16, I had graduated high school earlier and I started modeling. Now my sister and I were pretty young girls. And that's when this like ego started coming into play. Like, I deserve this. This beautiful life of, you know, me being taken out to nice dinners and modeling and making all this money and all of that. I felt like I was owed that because of my past and because of the way that I was brought up and because of my childhood abuse and trauma.
That's a funny equation. I'm trying to get my head around a little bit. I understand that the world sort of owes me something because I suffered.
Yeah.
I can't quite make it all line up in my head. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about the owing. Because behind it is there's a grandiosity that's growing out of the shattering.
Yeah, well, it kind of becomes its own addiction, right? This, mm-hmm. like, addiction to more, which we see a lot these days, especially in my generations and generations to come, is, like, this whole obsession with more. Like, if I look this way or if I'm like this person or if I have this much, then I'll be okay or I'll be accepted or I'll be loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just another form of addiction for me. Attention was an addiction for me.
Was there sexual addiction wrapped into this too? Because that sometimes goes in there with this.
There, you know what? I was actually really cut off from men.
Mm-hmm.
I had a few men that I let in, and I had some long-term relationships in between there, like 14 to 16 years old. Like, I jumped into this like long-term relationship and I escaped into his family,
right.
and his world.
Sure.
And then that didn't work out. And then I jumped into another almost two-year relationship with another boy, and escaped into his world. So it was all about this like escaping, pretending that I'm someone that I'm not, this addiction with like more, I need to be this way. And I just need to shut down. And I think that that's what the opiates provided for me, was that ability to shut out the rest of the world. And now I'm going to become somebody who I know that I'm not, but I feel like I can be this person that's likable
and loved.
It makes me feel
good to be this person.
And, you know, yes.
It's a pseudo-self. Pseudo-self. And then you're emotionally, though, you're shut down behind it.
Yeah.
Disconnected, which is the trauma. The trauma makes you have dissociation.
Yeah.
And so then you started going for things. Explain that whole path for me. Because I would think you'd be stealing just to support your habit as much as anything.
So I wasn't stealing. I was more like panhand, except for my mother. I took a lot of money from my mom. I mean, I would like write false bad checks. I mean, the whole nine. Because I felt like, you screwed up my life, and so now I'm going to take from you to provide my drug habit because you should pay for what you did to me, was my whole thinking. I was panhandling a lot on the streets. But for me, money wasn't really an issue. Like when I was modeling and working my show, I mean, I was making six figures a year. So my drug habit was taken care of.
Well, you said $10,000 a week was the habit?
Between my sister and me.
So 5,000
each. But okay. I was making almost more than double that a week when I was doing my show. So drugs weren't really, you know, a huge – it wasn't like I was struggling to find drugs until the very end when the show was over. I had gone through all of my money. And that's when I considered – I seriously started considering prostitution for myself. I mean, I was panhandling, which I was making enough. I was probably as panhandling enough to get about a gram of heroin a day. And you know, and that would sustain me for that day. And then the next morning we'd get up and we'd do it again.
Again, tell me how the Bling Ring fit into that.
Okay. So I started previous to Pretty Wild, I started modeling and acting, and my sister had been friends with Nick, who was the stylist, you know, that he claimed to be. He was like this stylist guy who's going to, you know, get us all dressed up in these cute outfits for our photo shoots and stuff like that. That's how I met Nick. Nick and Tess had previously gone to drug treatment together. That's how they knew each other. And Nick was this fun, young, flamboyant gay boy. And we didn't hit it off in the beginning, but we slowly developed a friendship. You know, back then, I can see how the people that I was surrounding myself with and those relationships were toxic, but I really didn't see Nick as, like, a bad person. I didn't know at the time that he had been robbing houses for years prior to that with these other girls. I didn't know the other girls or any of the other members. So I just met Nick, and he was dressing us in all these fabulous clothes, and he was really fun, and we were going out to clubs, and it was great. And I was in negotiations with my show for Pretty Wild at that point, and we were just having a good time. And my drug addiction was escalating. My mom eventually kicked my sister and I out of the house, and we went to go stay with Nick. In July of – I don't remember. It was 2009 – that's when Nick drove me to Orlando Bloom's house. So we were out partying, drinking. Nick was like, I've got to stop by this house on the way home. I was already heavily intoxicated. He tried to make me wait in the car. I waited in the car. Eventually I got sick of it. I walked upstairs and I witnessed them burglarizing this house. And my part in it is that he started shoo-shooing me out of the house or away from the property, and I grabbed a duffel bag that he threw over the fence, and we both ran down the hill together. And I knew that something was wrong. I mean, I called the cops like a couple days later, and I was like, something took place that was weird. And I stopped having contact with Nick at that point. And then October was when I was arrested for the burglary. Now, I fought that case openly on national television for my show, high on heroin. I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. I'm surprised I even made it as far as I did. Like, I thought that I probably would have either committed suicide before the end of it or, you know. So for me, taking the plea deal was the best bet. And that's what I did. I took a plea deal. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I was forced to get sober in jail for the first time. So I did my sentence in Linwood for that summer. I had a 6-month sentence, and I went in the end of June, and I got out, like, I don't know, 30, 40 days later. And during that time period, I really got a – I got to take a look at what was happening for me. Now I had all the crazy belief systems and perceptions and, you know, my own idea of what was taking place. But I knew that something was wrong. And I made a promise to myself. I'm like, oh, when I get out, I will stay sober. I can't drink and use. Like, I'd put two and two together, that drinking and using for me equated to pain, suffering, misery, and craziness.
Was there some sort of bottom experience? Or was it just an awakening?
It was just
insight?
Kind of, yeah, it was just some insight. Okay. I mean, I was in protective custody. So I was in a jail cell 23 out of 24 hours a day by myself, no human contact for almost 40 days. Hmm. During that time period, there was lots of contemplation about, like, how did I get here? I've never been in trouble before in my life. And here I am, 18 years old. I had just turned 18. It was like 4 days after my 18th birthday. And I'm sitting in jail.
Something ain't going right.
This is wrong. This is – something is seriously wrong. You know, and I got
– maybe it's that heroin stuff.
Right. So I got out. And within 2 weeks, I was smoking pot again.
Mm.
And my sister, Tess, who is my using buddy, we are – it's very toxic when we're together. I mean, it's like a tornado coming to wreck your life mm-hmm. when we spend time together. And she was like, my boyfriend kicked me out of the house. Can I come and stay with you? And I said, yeah, but I'm not doing H anymore. I'm not doing the block anymore. So if you're going to do that, you can't stay with me. And of course, she came to my house.
Just doing pot.
She was doing it. Just, you know, we were smoking pot together. She breaks out the foil. Mm-hmm. And instantaneously, I'm smoking the block again.
Mm-hmm.
How did this happen to me? 2 months after that, I was arrested for possession of heroin. I was shooting a lot of dope. I mean, I knew I was going to die. I was shooting a lot of dope.
Oh, there's your bottom.
Yeah.
There's your bottom.
My sister OD'd in my arms.
Because I was going to say, normally you don't get insight and stop using it. It's like, you got to know you're going to die.
Yeah. My sister OD'd in my arms, and I said I'd never shoot it again.
And
I'm shooting it again.
Yeah.
And the night before I was arrested, I was using in my mom's bathroom at her house. And I looked up at myself in the mirror and I was like, this is terrible. My little sister is in the next room. And I'm sitting here doing drugs. I can't stop. So I went to bed and I was feeling terrible. And I remember that night thinking, like, whatever you are out there, like, I don't know if there's a God. Because I had tried the whole God thing. Like, I had gone and lived at ashrams. I had gone to church and temples and Buddhist retreats and all of that. None of it got me sober. And I was just like, whatever you are, I need some help here. The next morning, I was arrested. I had a 0.08 of heroin on me. That was my last little hit in the morning. And I was like, I've got to get to my drug dealer's house. But I'm just going to wait until 8 o'clock in the morning to do this last little bit. 7 a.m., the cops were at my house. You know, and
God stepped in.
God stepped in. And
he had a uniform.
And I denied it. I even blamed the drugs on my little sister, which is just horrible. Mm. I mean, she was 17 years old at the time. I'm like, that's my sister's heroin, not my heroin. And, you know, there's not enough that I can do to make amends to her.
She's sober now, too?
My little sister's, no, she's normie.
Oh, it's a different one. Okay.
Yeah, my older sister's the one that's crazy. Mm. She's sober now, though, thank
good.
God. Yeah. Bob helped us
good.
Get her sober.
Fantastic.
Thank God. And I started kicking, and I didn't tell the cops that I was using, and I didn't tell the jail that I was detoxing because I didn't want to take responsibility for the drugs just yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but an angel stepped into my life, and his name is Mike Nassiter, and he's my attorney. My mom got me a new attorney, and he came to me in the form of a lawyer, but really he was a 12-step messenger. And he said, are you ready to take responsibility for your life? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you are going to go throw yourself at the mercy of that court. and you are going to tell them that you're a 19-year-old heroin addict and that you need help. And I did, and it worked. And I entered treatment 2 days after that, and that's when the rest of my life started.
Sober since?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. I say that I've lived many lifetimes in my 22 years here, and now with being a mom and a wife, it's
that must be amazing to you. You can't believe that you're there.
I can't.
Your baby is so cute. How long have you been married?
Thank you. In April, it was our 1 year anniversary.
Congratulations.
So like a year and a half now. And I never thought that I could be a friend, let alone a wife, and now a mother. Mm. You know, looking back at who I was, the person that was just deceitful and mean and angry and dark and just terrible, to being who I am today is just like...
I was talking to someone last night about a 19-year-old or a 17-year-old, and they went, oh, he's been diagnosed with – he's been on heroin for a few years, and he has a narcissistic personality disorder. And I said,
no kidding.
Yeah, and I said, well, wait a minute. On heroin, everyone looks like that.
Yeah. Well, the kick, it's like nothing's going to keep me from getting well. I have to get well. And it's like this demon that just kind of like – I mean, it just sucks you in. And I see a common thread, especially with heroin addicts, and it's trauma. Oh. With most addicts,
with most addicts, it's always with the opiates, the trauma, severe trauma. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're trying to medicate away, because you're so disconnected from it that it can't be regulated, but it's always there as a source of misery and pain, but you're not even aware of it.
Yes.
And so the opiates push it further down, and now I can kind of get on and be somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's perfect. You did it.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
And the interesting thing to me is the grandiosity and the narcissism that emerges. I think you're right. Some of it is the cultural context of today.
Yes.
And some of it is the nature of the trauma and the parenting failures and things that are going on today, which are common.
Yes.
And thank God you got sober.
Yeah. I'm so grateful. I mean, I wrote a piece for Vice a few weeks back called Why Are the Millennials So Screwed Up? And it's all about our parents. It's all about like our parents and our parenting choices. Like my mom, for instance, is like, I thought that if I only loved you enough and taught you how to be spiritual, that you would turn out okay. So by over loving you, you would be successful. And I asked her, I said, Mom, where did you think I was going to learn life skills? She was like, well, the majority of life skills are taught in school.
Yeah.
And it's hard because I see it a lot. Like I talked about my friend Jeremy. He doesn't mind that I talked about this. He's 25. His bio on Instagram is 25-year-old stay-at-home son that likes long walks to the refrigerator and his dog Maggie.
Wow.
And it's like that's so many of my friends. It's like their parents just love them and want to nurture them and coddle them and take care of them until they're 30. We have no life skills. No.
Well, now people would go, I actually agree with you, but people would go, oh, well, you're busy blaming. But I see that not as blaming, but explaining.
Yes.
It's helping understand how the millennials end up where they do.
Yes.
And they can choose to.
Exactly. That was my next point.
Go ahead.
That we now have the opportunity to recognize this and to do something different with our children. Because, I mean, my generation's poor children. I mean, it is absolutely necessary in this day and age to provide our children with life skills, resources. Yes, love is important. You want to love your children and you want to have them be, you know, confident and have self-esteem and all of that. But my mom's view of self-esteem by overloving me gave me a lack of self-esteem.
Right. Because lots of ego, no esteem.
Yes. Yeah. And I still battle it today. It's like I'm the greatest person in the world, but I'm also a piece of crap.
Right.
It's like it goes back and forth. We have a
great. There's a great. I don't remember where I heard this. I think it's an aphorism out there in the recovery community, but it's the best one. Is addicts sometimes will describe themselves as a piece of shit around which the whole world revolves.
Yes.
I love that one. I got to take a break and do another brief commercial. Then we're going to take an actual break, and then we're going to start taking some phone calls. Alexis Nears is my guest. You know her from the Bling Ring. Also, now her website, alexisnears.com. Twitter handle, @itsalexisnears. And I've got to remind you guys about our buddies at Lumosity.com. They, of course, the games that are based on the science of neuroplasticity and help improve brain performance. Not the kind of brain stuff we're talking about, Alexis, more about cognitive function, things like memory and focus and things that help people at work and at meetings. 40 million people are now playing these games, and it is specifically you sign up and you design the game and the series of games that are designed for you to help you develop the skills and the improvements that you're looking for. It's easy to get started. Of course, the games are fun. They can be played from everywhere, from your computer, iPad, iPhone. Again, with the Lumosity app, I did the memory matrix frequently on the Lumosity app before I get started on radio, particularly because I'm losing my attention by the end of the day. So go to Lumosity.com, click the Start Training button to create your own program. Start playing your first game. That is Lumosity.com, and tell them you heard it from me, Dr. Drew. We're going to take a quick break and be back with Alexis Nears after this.
Remember when you had to listen to radio programs on their schedule? But with this podcast, life is better because you get to listen on your schedule. But what about backing up your computer files at home or at work? What's your schedule look like there? You don't need to schedule that either, as long as you have Carbonite. Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud for you automatically whenever you're connected to the internet. You can try it for yourself free right now at Carbonite.com. There's no credit card required. Plus, if you use offer code Drew, you get 2 bonus months with your purchase. That's Carbonite.com, offer code Drew.
Meet Charlie, just one of the over 2 million people who've called California Psychics.
The reading happened over the phone, but it was like she was right there in front of me. It was like that I was talking to an old friend.
At California Psychics, our psychics have real gifts and communicate clearly. In fact, only 2 out of 100 psychics who apply are selected. Call 800-PREDICT, 800-PREDICT, or visit californiapsychics.com.
She brought up things that I did not mention, but she somehow knew them.
And we promise that if your psychic reading isn't the best you've ever had, it's free.
What I got was very specific, clear information that I could use and apply to my life.
Secure and confidential, California Psychics is a psychic service more people trust. Call 800-PREDICT. 800-PREDICT or visit californiapsychics.com.
This one call absolutely changed my life.
Call California Psychics now at 800-PREDICT. And if your psychic reading isn't the best you've ever had, it's free.
Welcome back to the Doctor Podcast. I'm here with Alexis Nears, new mommy, 6-month baby, 5-month old baby.
Yes.
Who's the cutest baby on earth, of course. Has there been any surprises being a mom?
Oh, lots. Mm. I mean, you just don't know what you're in for until you're actually in mommy mode.
Do you have more sympathy for your mom and the choices she made now that you're mommy?
No.
No. Well, I know for the bad stuff. Yeah, you're not going to bring that
you know
in your
what?
Life.
It's tough. It's tough. I mean, I'm doing like a lot of attachment parenting and stuff like that, so it's even harder.
Now I'm amazed you know in detail what that is. Is that something that's coming up in your therapy and stuff, or you read about it, or...
So I read about it. It's kind of like this new craze. Everybody's talking about it. And so I just kind of like mold it into like what works for me and my child. You know, I
believe the fundamental step, let's say, or the process of recovery is forming attachments.
Oh, yeah.
To your sponsor, to your therapist. To,
that's a good point.
Yeah, I believe the 12 step is a guided attachment experience. Mm. I really do. Because
I like
before
that.
before you can get into proximity, mm-hmm. you have to have faith. Faith yeah. that it's going to be safe, it's going to be okay, the world's not going to unravel. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to be honest about who you are and, mm-hmm. and the shame with another person. That's
yes.
intimate and connected. And then a few more exercises, and then you flip it around and you do that for somebody else
yeah.
where you reflect back to them as they share their story with you.
I like that.
Right?
That's neat. Yeah.
No, and that's probably why this is also meaningful to you know, as a parent, because
yeah.
that attachment is the big piece.
Yeah.
And what shatters attachment is trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So that you may have actually had a decent attachment to your mom, but then all that trauma just blew it apart.
Away, yeah.
And then she didn't have the other stuff mm-hmm. necessary to give you.
Well, I'm a big fan of Dr. Gabor Mate. I don't know if you're familiar
read his book,
with his,
the okay, ghost and the
realm of the hungry ghost.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I actually interviewed him, and we got into a great discussion about, you know, how the brain works and how all these things are developing ADHD and depression, how it works. And
it all goes together.
Oh, it's so amazing to me.
We now know a lot about it. And the other thing to keep in mind, it's no longer a single skull system.
Yes.
It's an intersubjective system.
Yeah.
It's we affect each other.
Yeah. And it almost makes me a little bit scared because I'm like, oh my God, is that perceived trauma? Like, what?
By the child? Yeah. So be careful. The main thing, right, because that's traumatizing, being
yes,
so anxious.
Yes.
So yeah. Just know that little t traumas are normal. Mm-hmm. And the key is the reparation.
Yes.
That we reconnect, re-soothe, mm-hmm. re-regulate.
Yes.
That's actually an important thing, that children learn how to experience something uncomfortable and then re-regulate.
I heard this from one of my sponsees. She was like, I didn't really have trauma. And I said, well, trauma doesn't necessarily have to be this big thing. It could be as little as what we think is little, a divorce. But if your parents...
That's a big trauma, by the way.
If your parents didn't help to soothe you or ease you into the process, or they were too focused on the fact that they were getting divorced and not taking care of you and your emotional needs, that's extremely traumatic.
Extremely traumatic. Or they could be abandoning during childhood, or they could be misattuned, mm-hmm. you know, that ability. You know, really, it's about bodies connecting with each other.
Yeah.
And that you can have an insecure attachment just by virtue of the mom's mm-hmm. attachment liabilities. Mm-hmm. I see a parenting question up there. Let's talk about this. Maybe it's not parenting. This is Emily, 19, Fort Lauderdale. Emily?
Yes.
Hey, what's up?
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Emily. I know who this Emily is.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know her. She tweets me a lot, though. She's so cute.
Yeah, I do. Oh my gosh, I can't believe you remember me. Sorry. I'm like your biggest fan.
Oh, you're so sweet. What's your question?
I was just wondering, since now that you have baby Harper, if you had any fun plans for the holidays, like Christmas and Thanksgiving and stuff.
Oh, that's a good question. So in my household, we had no tradition.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which, for me, I mean, we moved a lot. We that's never traumatic. Had. We that's never trauma. Had. My whole childhood trauma. there was never any stability. So I'm really all about tradition. I mean, as simple as making the Christmas card and sending out Christmas cards and doing the whole nine is really important. So my husband's parents are in Vancouver, so they don't get down here very often. And because I'm a twice convicted felon, I'm not going to Canada anytime soon. So what we're doing is we started a November. In November, we're going to Hawaii for 8 days with them. So that will be a tradition to get together with them during Thanksgiving. In Canada, Thanksgiving already passed, but, you know, the States, Thanksgiving. And, you know, we'll be starting traditions with her, you know, like Christmas cards and stuff like that. So, you know, just I love to cook and bake, and I hope to do that with her too, which I think will be really exciting as she gets older.
Emily, how did you start to follow Alexis?
Well, I watched Pretty Wild, and then I found out about the movie, and then I was like, oh yeah, I remember Pretty Wild. So then I rewatched it on Netflix, and then I found out where she is now, and I can relate a lot to it.
Why?
And
why?
Because I was in a really bad relationship. My ex was an addict, so I knew the whole thing with relapsing and all that, and it took a toll on me because I was, you know.
Other than connecting with Alexis, what else have you done for yourself?
Well, I'm not with him anymore.
No, but I know, but there's something in you that caused you to be attracted to him and to stay with him, and that's something that needs to be healed.
Right. I'm not sure. I haven't
Alexis,
gone that
maybe
far.
You want to speak to that?
I will. So I talked to Dr. Drew earlier about my 2-year relationship, and it was with a man who was a drug dealer, and he was like my daddy, you know, which we hear all the time, daddy issues, stuff like that. There's a great book by Dr. Pat Allen called Women Who Love Psychopaths. Great book. I mean, not just psychopaths. It talks about the narcissists and the addicts and stuff like that. You know, for me, I had to get to the root of why I was in this relationship, and it was because he wasn't able to really love me, but I was going to love him enough so that way eventually he would love me and we would be in this, like, sick love quarrel for forever and get married and have babies. Thank God I didn't do that. But yeah, I highly encourage you to take a look at that. Because we deserve it as women. We really do. We deserve to be with, caring and loving men. Now you're 19. I don't know how many other, you know, in the age range that you should be, that you would be dating.
We would bet, we would bet that she had an addict dad herself, or abandoning dad at least. Yes, mm-hmm. Emily?
Kind of.
Okay.
Kind of, yeah.
And that stuff needs to be healed before you're sort of, we call them, some people call it, you read Patrick Carn stuff, like love maps.
No, but that's interesting.
It's another model for how these traumas create bands of attachment mm-hmm. to recreate the past.
Yeah.
We sort of fit with the people that traumatized mm-hmm. us and then are attracted to that and then keep recreating it as a result. And so, Emily, you really need to get some therapy or go to Al-Anon or something. Al-Anon's awesome. You'll start – take Alexis' advice. She's a perfect source of advice. And you will start being attracted to and by a very different kind of person.
Yes.
All right?
What was that book called again?
What did I say? Women Who Love Too Much, Women Who Love Psychopaths.
No, Women Who Love Psychopaths, and then the other one was Love Maps.
Well, that was Patrick Carnes, okay. Like Facing Love Addiction.
Okay.
Facing Love Addiction.
So you might want to take a look at
PMLity.
That.
PMLity.
Definitely. Thank you.
Emily. Have a good day.
You too.
You've clearly educated yourself a lot, too. You've read a lot and stuff in the course of your recovery.
I went to school to become a KDAC.
Oh, good.
And then I just kind of, it just kept getting bigger and bigger.
Why don't you go do the full thing?
I'm thinking about it. You know, right now I'm just focusing on mommy.
Mommy, I understand.
When she turns a year or so, it's something that I would
It might be a perfect
consider.
You know, women are right now trying to figure out how to navigate parenting, mothering, marrying, mm-hmm. and
it's
career.
A lot.
It's really rough. There's a book by Deborah Spar. We put Deborah's the book name up here. The best. I'm going to interview her soon.
Okay.
It's the best. It's a podcast I have called All About Women, and she's written this book about women. And it's the best discussion of this I've seen. Women, Wonder Women, Sex, Power, and the Quest for Perfection is the name of the book, Deborah Spar. And it's really challenging. You know, how do you time all this? When do you do it? I think this may be the way to do it. Which
and
is,
how do you go out into the world and have a successful career and, like, come home and be the woman in the feminine role in your relationship with your husband?
It's that,
like, all of this is
And then
a
be
lot.
Available adequately. You're doing all this attachment stuff. That's time with
yes.
a capital T.
Yes.
And how do you do that properly?
That's
and what is what is the amount of time necessary to
I'll
not –
I'll just say this. My daughter just took a bottle for the first time at 5 months. I mean, this kid has been on me for my entire pregnancy, and then the last 5 months. I mean, I haven't left her for more than an hour up until this month. So it's a lot. And then balancing, like, you know, when I put her down, now my husband's coming home from work, and I have to be this, like, very feminine, loving wife because his job is intense. I mean, he owns a recovery house. Right now, he's going into business with Bob.
Is that the Acadia Malibu?
Yes. Yeah. We're now licensed transitional living. I mean, it's a lot in dealing with addicts all day. And then, it's much.
It's very depleting dealing with addicts all day. And if Bob signs on to it, I sign on to it because he has exquisite judgment on this stuff. And he's trying to develop a plan where he has sober living, which mm-hmm. are case managed.
Yes.
Which I think that's the future.
Yeah.
Because the otherwise – well, somebody has a question about this very issue. But it's – so much more cost effective.
Yes.
I mean, people don't remember the first month or 3 months of treatment anyway.
And I'm all about long term. For me, that's the only thing that worked was
you will
a
still
year.
See, well, you will still see 3 years as early in your recovery.
Yes.
You will still see it as such. But Amber Smith, we treated over on Subway Rehab once, she said the other day, she goes, listen, you were telling me these things, and for 3 years, I had no idea what you were talking about. In fact, I don't even remember what happened. I was sober in the program for 3 years and remember nothing.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, well, maybe I won't work so hard. All right, let's talk to Larry. What's up, Larry? 49.
I was calling to find out what you thought about the future of addiction medicine. It's been changing a lot in the last 10-20 years.
It's just addiction medicine per se?
Well, addiction, mental health therapy.
Well,
it's a broad question.
It's a huge
question.
Obviously, our understanding of the brain, here's what I think. Our understanding of the brain will continue to evolve, which is just massively evolving rapidly. Mm-hmm. We will have more targeted medication and interpersonal interventions. But I believe that much more has to be done on the interpersonal front, where like your recovery, for instance, mm-hmm. just as a for instance, medication could have helped you early on, for sure. It could help make recovery possible. Mm-hmm. But the actual recovery itself, the improvement, the actual restitution of a flourishing life from a mental health illness requires you to be willing to change everything.
Everything.
And people don't get that. And mm-hmm. people don't want to hear that, or they don't mm-hmm. want to do that. And so the job of mental health always becomes, well, okay, you're not going to change anything. Let's just make you feel better.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. It's not going to work very well.
Yeah.
Now, maybe it's unrealistic of me to think we're going to go more towards changing everything in people's lives. Maybe religion will serve more of a function. Maybe self-help 12-step will serve more of a function. Mm-hmm. But something more has to happen here in terms of making people really change everything.
Yeah.
Trauma treatments are going to get better for sure. And that's going to be an interpersonal experience.
Yep.
You should read Alan Shore's material. He talks all, it's pretty elaborate, okay. but it's all about trauma and the brain. He's worked it all out. and that stuff's going to get very elaborate. And my sincerest hope is that we back a little bit, no, a lot away from giving addicts pills.
Mm, I did no medication. And I had been on antidepressants for years and years and years. And when I got sober, I decided none of it. And I've been medication free since.
Giving addicts pills there may be some people that need it. I understand that, but
yes.
But generally speaking, we got to back away from that and let the thing that has worked for decades work.
This is what I find that's kind of unfair. We saw this with a client, or my husband saw this with a client, and I witnessed this firsthand. They diagnosed him bipolar.
Yeah.
When he's 20 days sober.
Yeah.
Of course you're having bipolar tendencies.
Right. Here's right.
He was on medication, heavy doses of Seroquel for a year. Mm. When a year later, the doctor goes, oh, you don't have bipolar.
Yeah.
You were just depressed and an alcoholic.
Right.
Newly getting sober. Well, no kidding. It's like, how can you identify
you can't.
All of these mental health
you
issues
can't. Even
with a person
in the DSM-5,
it says,
DSM-4R, whatever it is, it says at the bottom, provided that there's not a medical illness, withdrawal, or substance. Mm. In this period of time, because any of those can masquerade yeah. as a psychiatric problem.
Now, how long do you say wait? How long would you wait?
I like waiting 6 months.
Okay.
But I will treat people with severe bipolar symptoms mm-hmm. in withdrawal because, again, the goal is to make recovery possible.
Possible.
Not to treat their bipolar illness. Yes. And if they're super manic or something, they're going to go use. Yes. They're going to have bad judgment. And if I can help with that, I will. Mm-hmm. But I will not say you have bipolar disorder. I said these are bipolar medicines. Your brain's in a state now from the withdrawal that looks like this stuff. We're going to get you off this yeah. in 6 months, I hope, and reduce it as fast as we possibly mm-hmm. can. It's going to be to try to – again, it's like saying, you know, what's cardiology going to look like in a few years? So blah, blah. Let's take this call. Brendan. What's up, Brendan?
Hey, what's up, Dr. Joe?
What's going on?
So on a much lighter note,
yeah.
I have a question about melatonin and sports supplements.
All right.
I use a lot of different nutritional sports supplements, nothing illegal, basically anything you can find at GNC. And I'm running into this issue where – I've been taking ZMA, which is like zinc, magnesium, aspartate. It helps with recovery and energy the next day after you've worked out. And it has a low dosage of melatonin, about, I'd say, like 5 milligrams. I've tried different products that have like 1 or 3. And I've noticed that over the course of time, like, you know, if I take it, obviously it helps me get to sleep faster. And sometimes I won't even take it if I'm just tired after a long day. I've noticed that as I've been taking it, 3, 4, 5 months out here, that I've kind of become sluggish throughout the morning. It has B6 in it as well, so it kind of gives me some energy in the morning. But I don't drink any coffee. I don't drink any Red Bull energy drinks anymore.
Here's my bottom line on this. You're a 26-year-old healthy male. You should not. You can't make a healthy person healthier. You can enhance performance a little bit, and some of these supplements do have measurable effects, but we have they've not been studied from a standpoint of their impact on your health. The FDA is beginning to close in on these things, but there may have significant problems from these things. We don't know. Anything that is going to screw with your testosterone levels is going to put you up your risk for prostate cancer and vascular disease. It's a serious issue. We don't even know the potential carcinogenicity of any of these other substances. They've not been studied. In terms of their effect on performance, even that is sort of suboptimal, let's say, research. It's not that well done. It certainly isn't up the standard of what other medications or anything that would be used to alter your chemistry is required. So I'm a healthy 26-year-old should be using diet and exercise alone. I don't think you should be taking supplements. So if you're feeling bad because of supplement, don't take it. You agree with me?
I mean, anything that makes you feel bad, you shouldn't take.
Yeah, pretty simple. To be fair, anything that makes you feel good, you should be worried about too. I'm just saying.
You should be worried about anything. If you're a young,
if you're a young, healthy person,
it.
I know people are going to take stuff, and I get that. But there's no free lunch in nature. I've been saying this for years. And if something makes you feel really good, there's going to be a price, some kind of price mm-hmm. to be paid, whether added risk of something or some downside on the other side of it or triggering addiction, whatever it might be.
Yep.
There's Mother Nature, you know, you're a perfect instrument. And focus on your diet. That's it. And mm-hmm. exercise. Those are the two things you actually can do that make a huge difference. Alexis, I got another bit of business, and then we're going to wrap up after that. But this is about our buddies at GoToMeeting. You hear us use it all the time here at the Corolla Network. It's GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It is a simple way to meet online from anywhere, anytime. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, you can share screens. Again, it gets the team together with a high-definition video conference. You can launch or join the team meeting from anywhere, use a computer, mobile phone, or tablet. Even the iPads, of course. And the cool thing is not only do you get the video conferencing, but you also get to put up documents on the screen, and you can work on one another's documents as the meeting is ongoing. We love GoToMeeting here at the Corolla Network. And I'd say, Gary, would you say every single meeting we've ever had that's not in-face, but with GoToMeeting, we've had lots of them. They've been great. It really is a good product, which is why I think everyone's seeing it all over the place these days. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to meeting, and you can try it free for 30 days. GoToMeeting.com is the website. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code Dr. Drew. GoToMeeting.com, promo code Dr. Drew, because meeting is believing. So, Alexis, as you think about your story and the work you're doing now, what's the big picture? What would you want people to take away from, say, today's podcast? Because your story is dramatic, and it's interesting, and I think it's historically relevant,
and this
as you
is
say.
Like wrapped up into an hour.
I know, right? It's crazy.
So much to it.
I know, it's crazy. And now you're a mom and you're a wife.
Yes.
I think you have an important, you ought to think about this. I think you have an important women's story to tell too. I could tell that sort of wrapped into your thinking lately.
You know, my biggest thing that I really want to share with people is that life is beautiful and it is for you, and that it is possible to recover. I feel like in this day and age, Bob was telling me the other day, like 70% of Americans. Yeah, Bob Forrest, sorry. Bob was telling me 70% of Americans are on some sort of drug right now. And he's telling me all these statistics. And I'm like, why? Why is this happening? And I think that there's so many levels to it. But if you are looking for help, it is there for you. This year alone, I've lost so many friends. So many friends.
Died of addiction.
Yeah. Or suicide.
Yeah.
Because of addiction.
Yeah. People lose that fact that addiction is a deadly disease.
Yeah.
It kills more frequently than the vast majority of cancers.
Yeah.
If I told you you had a life-threatening cancer, you'd have me airlift you to a cancer center.
Yeah.
But when I tell people they have addiction, they're like, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll deal with it. I'm fine.
You know, so it is possible to recover, and I think that what my husband and Bob have going on that's really great right now is this really like non-judgmental, loving approach. I mean, they have a very strong relapse policy, which is great. Probably one of the only places in Malibu sober living that actually has a relapse policy. They're aware of their level of care and all of that, which is fabulous. But we are here to love you and to encourage you to take this thing slow, and that we can walk this journey with you. And that's what I, you know, am loving right now. I'm loving the women that come to me that are so broken and in so much pain that I'm able to just hug and say, it's okay. You know, and that there is a way out. 'Cause for me, I didn't know that there was a way out. I had a perfect, beautiful set of circumstances that led me to become willing enough to just try this. But I didn't know that it was available to me. And, you know, I know that you've got a lot of listeners that right now are probably using. And when you're ready, or when you're willing to give yourself a shot, there are people here that want to help you, and especially with the new healthcare system.
We don't know, but I hope so. We'll see. I hope it works.
I mean, yeah. If you can go get insurance and get that mental health coverage, yeah. I mean, really, there's options. There's always options.
And 12-step is free.
It is free. The detox part is still expensive at a lot of, I mean, at least in California, it's.
Yeah.
Well,
people end up on Suboxone and stay on it. That's the bigger problem.
Yeah.
But let's go big picture away from addiction for a second and say, would you say relationships are important?
Yes. Yeah. It's a big thing. Community. My community right now is so key. I'm a part of this like really loving and beautiful environment, which is something that I'd never experienced before. We all deserve that.
Relationship and community.
Yeah.
Some sort of spiritual something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's
missing
everywhere.
For me, it's not religious. Yeah. For me, it's not religious.
Good. Because a lot of people get bogged down in that. I don't think it has to be at all.
Well, yeah. I mean, people, when we get sober, a lot of people I see go from so far right to so far left. Yeah. I mean, it's like there's these extremes. It's like, where's the sweet spot right in the middle? And for everybody, it's different. But for me, it's more about like the spirituality aspect of things. You know, meditation is huge for me in my life. So, yes, those are three big components.
And then trauma is treatable. You can recover from trauma.
I did a lot of EMDR therapy, which I believe saved me.
Good. Yeah. How long did you do it for?
I did it for probably a good 6 months.
Yeah, that's what I figure. EMDR is, again, a specialized treatment. It's kind of like hypnosis. I think people would understand it best that way, where you're looking at a light while somebody's taking through a guided experience of getting back in touch with the trauma in a new way.
And it's scary and it's painful, but it's freeing, you know, and that's what led me to the step that I took this month, which was actually finally reporting the abuse, which was like the closing. I was able to close the book.
You're still having all kinds of feelings with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I could see it.
Because I'm not trying to harm this person for what they did to me. But this person now has a child, and I almost feel like...
You have an obligation.
I would feel responsible if anything was happening to this child. And I mean, especially now being a mother, I can't imagine anybody touching my child.
Can you imagine? That's craziness.
So...
Deep breaths.
Yeah.
Dr. Cheryl Errett and I discuss EMDR in episode 68. If people are interested in what that is and how it works, get more into it. We actually referred Adam for it.
Yeah.
it might help if he does.
Maybe.
Well, listen, Alexis, it is a privilege to be here with you, and it's so interesting to hear that story. One of the things I would hope people would take away, aside from what recovery is like today, how to do it, what the important issues are for all of us. But there's this weird thing that we're going through right now. When if somebody were to see the 17-year-old Alexis, they would want to beat her up.
Yes.
What's the matter with you? Yes. Don't you do that? Why don't you? And why don't you? And you want to. And I cannot imagine a less effective way to approach a 17-year-old Alexis.
I mean, that's the way to make me run.
Yeah.
And if,
let's say, you could handcuff you and make you listen to us, we'd only re-traumatize you.
Yes.
And I am beside myself with that. That sort of TV is perpetuating that these days. Mm. Why did you let them have it? You know, why do you let them have you? No. Yeah. That's not how it works. It's more about showing people the facts and letting them come to them.
Yeah. That's what worked for my sister. I mean, I thought that nothing was going to help her. And by me just going to meet with her, with Bob and my husband, and saying, I love you. I had a heartfelt amends with her. I'm sorry for trying to make you get sober, because I thought that I would only be okay if you were sober. Mm. That's so selfish of me. And I said, here, this is what I'm seeing. And if you're ready for help, let me know. And she wasn't. And 2 weeks later, she was.
There you go. That's how you lay the groundwork. That's how you do it.
All I had to do was love her unconditionally.
Well, be careful because you end up with your mom. People, yes. You know what I mean? People don't understand what that is.
Boundaries, with boundaries is what I mean to say. It's like I'm a big fan of Al-Anon. So love her and have firm boundaries. I will not pay for you. I will not give you money. I will not do this, that, and the other.
I will not be overcome by you. I will not need you to be anything.
But if you want to meet for coffee once a week, I'd love to see your face. And she didn't. But, there's shame and guilt and pain. But at least 2 weeks later, she knew when she was ready that she could give me a call and that I would be there to help her. Mm-hmm. So.
It's a process.
Yes.
The website for the recovery facility is acadiamalibu.com.
Yes.
Bob, you'll find Bob Forrest there. You'll find Alexis there. And it seems I don't have direct experience with these guys, but I have experience with the players, and it seems like it's going to be a good place. Yeah. So, Alexis, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for
having
me.
Oh, my pleasure. That about does it with Dr. Podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Corolla Digital.